Hey PTs, are you maxed out on hours? You tired of endless patient notes? Still chipping away at those student loans? PTLive.me is an on-demand patient clinic hub helping licensed PTs get ahead of the rat race. Stay tuned for more or check out PTLive.me.
The PT Pintcast is powered by International Service Learning. For over 22 years, International Service Learning has been leading volunteers to 12 different countries to provide physical therapy services for those in need. They believe in the power of the individual that chooses to serve and make a difference in the lives of others. They have opportunities in Costa Rica, Belize, Mexico, the Dominican Republic, and many more locations around the globe. For more information about volunteering, visit islonline.org.
This is the PT Pintcast, a podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
So another episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. Another friend coming on the show. I want to introduce my buddy, Ed Devitt. Ed and I played some ice hockey back in high school, and he went through a journey. And I think I knew parts of your story from high school. I was a year ahead of you. You were 98. You were class 98. I'm class 97. So play on the hockey team. I like to say this about our ice hockey team in high school. We never really won a game, but we never lost a fight. We were proud. We were proud of that. We were like the Bad News Bears of ice hockey back then. I don't know. I had fun.
I had a lot of fun.
There we go.
It was great.
It was a good time.
Definitely.
And when you look back at things like that, that's kind of the time in your life that makes you kind of who you are going forward.
Correct.
You know? So the reason that we got in touch, I mean, I don't think we've actually hung out in a couple of years.
Right,
you're still
right.
In the Hudson Valley, New York, and that's where I went to high school, and you're still in Montgomery.
Yes, I am.
And now we're married. You got a baby on the way.
Yep.
So congratulations.
Yes, thank you so much.
When are we due?
My wife is expecting January 21st.
So you can't go anywhere in January.
No.
You are going to be glued. You're going to be glued home.
It's going to be tough, but I know I'm not going anywhere.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
Yeah, definitely.
So we kind of reconnected through what most people do is Facebook. I saw what you were up to
right. And
said, wow, now that I'm in PT school and what you went through, and we'll get to that, and what you're doing now, two things that kind of intersect.
Right.
And because everybody listening now doesn't know the whole backstory, I wanted people to hear it, and I wanted them to hear it in your words. So where do you typically start? Because you do speaking advocacy for what we're going to get to. Where do you typically start? Do you tell your story?
It depends. Basically, on the crowd that I'm speaking with,
right.
I adjust my tone, you know, I kind of curtail the story. And,
well, feel free to have whatever tone you want with me.
No,
because we know each other.
Yeah, no. But, you know, I started, it was back in 1999, June. I was, you know, going through high school, kind of struggling to find myself. And, you know, alcohol and drugs were there for me to turn to. So it was a troublesome time for me. But one thing led to another, and I was involved in an automobile crash.
Mm-hmm.
I say crash today because it wasn't really an accident. When you put an intoxicated driver behind the wheel of a car and then it stops moving, it's a crash.
Right.
And that's just what had happened to us.
So I just want people to know that one of the best websites that I've seen designed for anything is your website now. It's brainnewday.com. And it tells your story really well. I went to high school with you. I didn't know all these bits and pieces because after your crash and not accident, and I kind of like how you phrase that, it's a crash, not an accident. That's where the story kind of got hazy for me because you were in recovery and I was off to college and you are now recovering.
Right.
So start on that night because, and again, I urge everybody to check out that website, brainnewday.com. So wherever you want to start along that.
Well, that evening was just like any other. Myself and some friends were out unwinding how we did, you know, the stresses of the day.
Right.
And, you know, being 18 years old, that was 1 year out of high school. And we had been asked to leave the house that we were at because we were being too rowdy and didn't want to draw any attention to that apartment.
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up going out of the house, and as we were leaving the parking lot, we saw a third friend come up to the car, and he's like, "Hey, where are you guys going? You mind if I get in, get a ride with you?" Mm-hmm. You know, and he wanted to go to a relative's house over in Beacon, so the driver said, "Sure, no problem, hop in." And I was about to get into the back seat of the car to give this guy a shotgun, you know, right. Because that's
call
what
shotgun.
You did, you right. know.
Right. Call shotgun.
Yeah. So he was a little older than me, and I just was like, "Ah, whatever." But the driver leaned over and put his arm on mine. He said, "No, Eddie, you're all right right there. Let him get in the back." So that's what had happened. He got behind the driver, and away we went. And I'm not too sure exactly what transpired after that. All I can recall is going across the bridge. From police reports, they said we clipped a tractor trailer. Yeah, on the west side of the Beacon Bridge, Newburgh Beacon Bridge, and then just accelerated.
Right, to get away from an incident.
To get away from any questions,
right.
You know, any... Oh no,
right.
Pull over, we're gonna exchange
right.
information. We were all had no business being in the car at that time. So what happened next, I recall leaning back semi-reclined in the front seat passenger seat and just seeing the rafters of the bridge go by lit up under the dark sky, you know. And next thing I knew, I was waking up a couple weeks later in a hospital. Not knowing where I was, not knowing what had happened.
And there really was no moment. You really didn't remember the moment of that crash. It was just, I mean, the next thing you knew, it was weeks later.
Correct.
Wow.
What I've learned is that the brain, you know, has a way of protecting
yep.
itself and blocking out horrific things, things that it doesn't want to remember, you know? I mean... I can't see myself going to a hypnotherapist and saying,
right.
"Can you bring me back to that point?" It's not something that I choose to
sure.
recall. But I do remember just that last instance before the crash. And we actually hit the toll barrier going, the speedometer froze in the car. That year car, maybe a 2000... Ford Mustang, that was one of the devices that was manufactured on it. In a high speed crash, it would freeze the speedometer. So then the police or whomever would
knew.
Have an ability to say, okay, they were going 140 miles an hour.
So is that what it read?
Yes.
140.
Just under 140.
Wow.
But
and you hit, now, when one of my classmates was reading your website, she read toll barrier and she thought it was the arm.
Mm.
The arm that comes down.
Oh, right.
But the barrier is the large concrete structure
right.
that holds up the toll booth.
Right.
So that car wasn't getting past
that. Correct. This toll barrier was kind of offset to prevent someone from just speeding through.
Gotcha.
It's not like we were just trying to blow through it and not pay for the toll.
Right.
I believe there was one easy pass lane. You know, back then. And this happened to be through the easy pass lane. I had gone back there to kind of speak with somebody that might have a little more information. I realized that years after my injury, I became kind of hungry for more information regarding what had happened, you know, and
sure.
speaking to anybody that may know or understand. So I went back and I spoke to the woman that was working in the toll booth that evening. She had just walked out of the toll barrier, the one that we came through, maybe 5 minutes before. So she wasn't inside the toll barrier when we came through.
So had she had been there...
It would have been a traumatic experience
wow.
for her, I believe.
We need to talk about what happened because there were three of you in the car.
Correct.
And you talked about how you picked your seat that night. So if you want to talk about the other passengers.
Sure. Yes. The car hit the toll barrier. So the toll barrier, like you were saying, there's about 15 to 20 feet of concrete that divide the lanes as you're getting into the toll barrier. So you can't switch over at the last minute
right.
and cut over to the
right.
lane. You're kind of stuck in the lane that you're going through. So we launched up off of that. That sent us airborne. The driver's side of the vehicle kind of T-boned. The car went sideways, and then it T-boned into the toll barrier. I don't, like, that's one of the unsolved mysteries that I have, you know. What did it look like? How did I survive that crash, right? You know, I mean, the car was airborne about 20 feet in the air. There are scrape marks on the interior side of the toll barrier. And, you know, the car landed. I don't know whether it tumbled, what it looked like, but it ended up coming to rest probably 30, 35 feet on the, through the other side of the barrier.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was moving. Now, my brain, you know, going at that rate of speed, my body's in motion. Coming to an abrupt stop, my brain bounced off the interior of my skull. So that type of injury is called a coup contra coup, you know, where it bounces off the front and the back. So I had some deficits, you know. It wasn't like a specific area of my brain that was more of a focused injury.
Right.
It was kind of diffused. So that's why it took me weeks. It took me 5 years, you know. They said, okay, we'll send you home. But and this was, mind you, in 1999. We've come leaps and bounds in determining the recovery process.
The best practices to do.
Correct. I mean, the physical therapy end of it, they're pretty much, they put me back together. You know, like, I have the utmost respect for all physical therapists, because if it weren't for pressuring me to get through these exercises and doing the things that I didn't want to do at the time, I wouldn't be who I am today. You know, so for all the patients out there that have a TBI, just do what your PT tells you.
Just listen. Don't worry.
Just listen. It'll be okay. So, and I mean, but I don't know if that was, you know, part of the injury or if that was, you know, my age. Like, I didn't want to have to start at ground, like, home base again. You know, right. I didn't want to have to relearn, retrain my body. You know, I just graduated high school and now I'm doing this stuff that I need to do to be able to function.
So now we have the crash, and you said the next thing you remember, is it a couple weeks later?
It was probably, I was in a coma, you know. I never really knew that until I was asking questions, like, I would ask my mother, who was there, and she's like, no, you weren't in a coma because you were squeezing my hand. You know, you could hear us. But finding out that that was just an involuntary spasm, you know, so it wasn't really like I was acknowledging them. My head was swollen like a medicine ball.
Right.
You know, and my eyes were closed and they were swollen shut. So that's all part of the recovery, you know, understanding fully what had happened, what transpired, the recovery, grasping that, you know. And I struggled with addiction because, okay, I'm all back together, but inside my head, it was a little different. My thinking process was totally turned upside down, you know. Things that I used to be able to do, I could no longer do.
So let's start with when you wake up. So you wake up, and now the recovery process is now going to begin. So where were you physically? Could you move around in bed? Could you get out of bed? Where were you?
I spent 18 days at Westchester Hospital, Valhalla, New York. Mm-hmm. And there I was bedridden. You know, I didn't really move out of the bed. Then I was transported to Helen Hayes Rehabilitation in West Haverstraw. And that is where, you know, my first memory of it, my father came in and stood me up, got me out of the bed, and was like, all right, stand up. You know, kind of like propping me up.
Right.
You know, just kind of giving me a little boost where I needed it, because nobody else was doing it, I guess. And I stood up and he's like, there, you're all right. Now sit back. And then I started to lean over like I was going to fall. And he's like, all right, sit down. We'll take it tomorrow, you know. But I think just that was the impression. That was the feeling that everyone wanted. They just wanted me to get back to where I was, you know, before the accident.
Well, the thing that I took away from some of the things you had on your website and from just talking to other patients of TBI, your scars might have healed outside, visibly. Mm. So a loved one or a caregiver or a friend might see you and say, well, just let's go, get up. Stand up. What's the problem?
Right.
And there's other things at play. And that's what family members and caregivers need to know, is there's a lot of other things in a really sensitive area that are still going on that are going to impede your progress.
Correct.
But it's hard to see it because he's looking at me. He's smiling. He's good. You know, his Band-Aids are gone. His scratches have healed, so he should be okay to come home. But you had some intensive therapy.
Yes, I did. I started going, walking up and down the emergency stairwell while I was at Helen Hayes Hospital.
So why did you start doing that? Were you already in PT? Was this a couple of days in? So
yes,
you knew, you recognized that you were the only one that was going to get you out of there.
Correct. And I was on a mission. I said, if I can't walk up and down these stairs, or if I can't walk, there's no way they're going to let me out of here. And then I said, well, if I can walk out of here, they're not going to keep me here. And I was just determined to get better as fast as I could. And I was making strides almost on a daily basis, you know. It all happened so fast. Like, they took my gastrointestinal tube out, my G-tube. Mm-hmm. A week before I was discharged. So I didn't really have the pleasure of eating the desirable hospital food. That was my determination when I was going up and down the elevator.
So this wasn't part of PT. You took this upon yourself to sneak into the stairwell in the hospital and practice yourself because
Correct.
You recognized that.
Correct.
That's good.
I didn't see the harm, you know.
As you said earlier, listen to your PTs, do what we say and not more. Okay.
Correct.
But that was something you needed. You needed to recognize that and take ownership of your own therapy.
Correct. So against my doctor's orders, I was released. You know, they wanted to keep me there for another 2 weeks.
How long were you there at that point?
I was in Westchester Hospital for 18 days and the same for Helen Hayes.
Okay.
So about a month and a half
okay.
total, 45 days.
Your doctor wanted you there for what, 2 more weeks?
Yeah, 2 more weeks, he thought. And I was ready to go home. So they set up the condition that I would be released if I promised to come back to PT at the location of the hospital.
As an outpatient,
correct. So I did that, you know, I went 5 times a week,
wow.
driving down to Havistraw, West Havistraw, and I was horrible. I was, you know, the people that love me, that care about me the most, I was giving them hell because I didn't want to, what the hell am I doing? I don't need to go to summer school, you know, this is, and then they put in my aunt, who I couldn't be mean to. My mother sent my aunt in there to kind of pacify me, and I was just like, oh, all right, aunt so-and-so, I can't do that.
They knew your kryptonite.
My weakness, exactly.
Couldn't be mean to her.
No.
So where were you physically? If you were to describe yourself, you could walk on your way out? You could walk under your own power when you self-discharged?
Barely. I mean, a strong gust of wind would have blew me over.
Right.
My depth perception, my vision, mm-hmm. was I would have to close one eye to look at somebody.
Be able to focus.
Yeah, to only see one of you. Otherwise, it would be strenuous. And
how about memory and how about cognitive? Like, where were you in terms of remembering short-term, long-term?
It was pretty scattered, you know. At first, it was tough. I can recall the memory exercises with my physical therapist, my occupational therapist.
Mm-hmm. Or you probably had, I mean, I'm guessing you had a whole team, speech, OT, PT.
Yes, exactly. I would have these exercises where she would say, okay, dogfish. And then just remember what I say. And we did a bunch of other exercises. And then she's like, what was the word I asked you to say? And I was like, starfish? It was tough for a while, but finally I did get it. I would just say, okay, you know what she's going to ask you. Remember right. that word. Remember right. that word. And really, I think that was what was key to my rehabilitation, you know, and just routine, you know, doing things by process. Mm-hmm. And it was a long haul.
I don't remember when it was. I was away at school. I was away at college right. at this time. So I remember I heard about the accident. Mm-hmm. I didn't know all the details. I didn't know about the stuff that's actually on your website.
Right.
I just knew that there was an accident on the bridge. And I remember running into you. It was either a year or two after that. I wanted to say hi. I didn't know if you'd remember me. Mm-hmm. I knew it was a serious accident. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember where we were. We were somewhere in Montgomery. And I remember saying, hey, Ed, how you doing? And you looked up and you kind of looked at me and you said, you gave me that look like I almost read it as I'm supposed to know this guy. Mm-hmm. He obviously knows me because he said my name. And you smiled at me and said, hey, how you doing? I'm doing great. And parted ways. Mm-hmm. And then I saw you again 2 years after that. Ed, how you doing? And this was the part that I got really excited. You said, Jimmy, I'm doing really well. And I'm like, got it.
Mm.
But that was that was 4 years after that. So right. in between that time, how much was lost in terms of when you came home? Because you just described how you were physically mm-hmm. and how your memory was with memory exercises.
Right.
How was it with people and your history and events that had happened?
It was hard, you know. I'm not gonna sugarcoat it because it was, I mean, just I still have trouble today, like, with names, you right. know, memorization. Of course, people that I grew up with and family, I know their names.
Right.
But people that just meet, I have to work extra hard.
That's just because one of them, that we're a little old now.
Yeah, I know.
No, but I can see where that would be hard, and especially with things that are coming from your past. I mean, you're saying you're working on memory exercises for short term.
Correct.
But just things coming from the past, that's got to be hard because, as you said earlier, it was repetition that helped you.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're seeing somebody you went to high school with, it's 10 years later, 12 years later, there's no repetition there. Are you recognizing that you do know them, but you can't put the face to the name? Is that kind of how it?
Correct.
Okay.
Or the name to the face.
Right.
I can definitely say that, it's come leaps and bounds just from, you know, the recovery process mm-hmm. has been tremendous. You know, and it's, you gotta give, what I've realized is you can't rush it. Everybody's brain injury is individual. There are no two brain injuries that are alike. So there's no two rehabilitations that are going to be the same thing.
Yeah, good message.
You know, and I don't want to give false hope to anyone, you know, that's struggling. But what I've also found is that people that suffer from strokes, you know, they can be supported the same way because it is almost like a similar injury. So some of the brain injury support groups that I've gone are meshed up with stroke support.
Any of those you want to share the names of, or websites, or things that you found helpful?
Well, the Brain Injury Association of New York State has been tremendously helpful with me taking ownership of my brain injury. You know, support groups, local support groups within the area in which I live. But I mean, you can go anywhere and find a local chapter with brain injury support. That's what I've found is most beneficial, yes.
Okay.
We're going to take a 60-second break and be right back with Ed Devitt on the PT Pintcast.
Working out his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pintcast. Are you ready? It's time for the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz. Keeping you on your game before and after the NPTE. Here's today's question.
How many questions are on the NPTE? And as a caution, this is a trick question. So again, how many questions are on the NPTE?
We'll be right back with the answer of today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz. Don't touch that dial.
Humanity's greatest advances are not in its discoveries, but in how those discoveries are applied to reduce inequity.
Doing what's never been done before is intellectually seductive.
We all need to contribute. Me, you, we. It is our duty. With international service learning, travel to a new part of the world, learn the skills to help others, and serve those in need. Visit ISLonline.org for more.
The PT Pinecast is powered by PTLive.me. PT Live wants you to know, we know you love ortho, but love doesn't always pay the rent. And let's face it, home health is, well, home health. Join PT Live's growing team of on-demand physical therapists working from anywhere, anytime, with anyone. Screen patients, help clinics nationwide, and next date night you can say, have the ribeye, honey. PTLive.me. We'll take it from here.
Okay, here's today's PT Final Exam Pop Quiz one more time.
How many questions are on the NPTE? And as a caution, this is a trick question.
And the answer to the PT Final Exam Pop Quiz is...
There are 250 questions on the NPT. However, 50 of these items are pretest items and are unscored. So, bottom line, plan on answering 250 killer physical therapy questions on your NPTE.
Thanks for playing along at home, boys and girls. Remember, for your NPTE test prep, all you need is the PT Final Exam. Find them online at ptfinalexam.com/pintcast. And we're back. This is the PT Pintcast.
Back with Ed Devitt on the PT Pintcast right now. You can check out his website, brandnewday.com.
So let's go back. So now where you discharged a little bit earlier than your mm-hmm. doctor wanted. Right. You can walk, kinda.
Kinda, yeah.
A little bit of vision issues, yeah. A little bit of memory problems. But they got your aunt you can't be mean to, bringing the therapy 5 times a week as an outpatient. You remember any of your therapist's names? You remember anybody?
Good Aunt Phyllis, yes. Sean, okay. S-H-A-W-N, maybe she was a girl. And I went back there recently to, say hello and right. thank the people that put me back together again. And she was no longer there. But I did happen to see the doctor that ripped my G-tube out. It's funny because the people you don't think you want to see, mm-hmm. you end up seeing them.
They still stick around.
Yeah. So
now you're home and you're doing PT outpatient.
Correct.
There are some other issues there still. So now you're making progress.
Yeah.
You look pretty good right now, but this is several years ago. So you're making progress and you have to start going to physical, or you get to go to physical therapy less and less until what?
It was pretty much, based on my, I can't say it was based on my, I was determining my outcome, no.
But your progress.
Yeah, my progress, right. I definitely was, I did have to meet some goals, mm-hmm. I guess, so they kept track of that, and, just exercises, they would test me, and, I would see gradual improvements, but, I was still hopeless, because my world had been turned upside down. And I didn't know that it would ever get better.
That's an important thing to hear. I imagine anybody in that situation, that's one thing that they're going to deal with a lot every minute.
Right.
Not knowing if they're going to get better.
Right. But that's definitely proven to be a choice. I'm in control of how I want it to be. I could sit there and say, oh, well, I can't do this anymore. I can't do that. I remember when I used to do this. But there's so much that I can do, and being an advocate and being a support for so many other individuals, getting out there and speaking to delegates, representatives.
So let's talk about that. So now you're doing advocacy, you're doing public speaking, you're working within the government of New York State, but you're down here in the DC metro area on Capitol Hill,
right.
where decisions are made.
Right.
So what kind of things are you advocating for? What are you doing in New York State versus traveling down here to D.C.?
Down here in Washington, D.C., I was at Hill Day thanking representatives for their support of the Comprehensive Addiction Recovery Act, CARA. It's an acronym. And up in New York State, I was advocating for people with brain injuries to have their needs met if they're not able. I am so blessed and fortunate that I'm independent. I don't have to rely on transportation. I'm able to drive. These are all things that I wasn't sure if I was ever going to be able to do again.
So how'd you get from doing outpatient 5 days a week? You still had, you work on the memory games. What was it like in between then and now? Because now you can drive. Now, you know, you're married. Now you're expecting a baby. You're doing all these advocacy things. What happened in that time?
The thing that happened, the thing that turned a light switch on, Jimmy, was me becoming part of a support group. The first time, you know, a friend of mine said, you should come to this, check this support group out. You know, it's for traumatic brain injury support. And I was just like, I'll get to it. You know, I'll see you. And then a couple weeks would go by and she'd say it again. And I'd say, I forgot, or I was busy with this. Mm-hmm. And then finally one day I made a point of it and said, listen, when can I be at this location? When are you guys having the next meeting or meetup? And she gave me the time and the location, and I showed up there. And when I went in, I was sitting around the table with probably 12 other individuals that all each had various different injuries, or their injuries manifested differently.
Right.
So I was just, you know, sitting around this table, and then we would go around and share what we struggle with and how things are and what's been going on.
How was that? Because at first you said you were apprehensive about going.
Right.
So how was that, just sharing your story amongst other people who were semi-familiar with?
This was, you know, this was the turning point in my recovery. This is what made me realize that I was standing in front of myself to recovering fully. Fully acknowledging it and speaking out about it is what I need to do. And you know, I can't stress it enough for people with TBI, but for me, that's what was the turning point. And the moment I started sharing about it, you know, letting it go, that was so moving for me. You know, it was kind of like this weight, this invisible weight, had been lifted. You know, and I was no longer a prisoner of my own injury.
Was it helpful because they were in similar situations? Is that easier to talk about in front of them?
There is a, you know, common bond that individuals share when they're going through something together. You know, that's the beauty of a support group, because you're forced to be around these people that know exactly what you're talking about. You know, they forced us into that situation. No. You go there on your own will, free will, mm-hmm. and, you know, that's where the magic happened for me. I've seen others just, you know, some of the people, you know, I said this, couldn't get there by themselves. They had to rely on somebody else to drive them there. And, you know, it really just put my recovery under the microscope.
Because you were able to drive yourself
there. Right, right.
And how far after your accident was this? Because as you said, when you left and you became an outpatient, you could walk barely. Mm-hmm. So how much time did it take for you to learn to drive again, or to have enough memory to make sure you could get home?
Probably a couple of months. That wasn't too, you know, like geography. I could remember things. It was. I say odd because there were certain things that I wouldn't, like short-term memory, I would really struggle with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you asked me, what did we start this conversation with?
Right.
I'd be like, But long-term memory, that I'm fortunate enough to be able to have good recall.
So after the accident, and because, again, your website, really well done. Was that done by somebody you went to high school with? I recognize
yes.
his name.
Yes, Charlie Graham.
Yeah, I looked it up because it was so well done.
With Volume 8.
Yeah, and I emailed him and I said, just got off Ed's website, and it's mm-hmm. really good. And the website just tells the story. And again, I knew you back then, but didn't know all of this. So between your recovery and I think finding their support groups, you kind of battled addiction again. Because
yes.
of course, you're in a moment of weakness and you're looking for something.
Right.
So you had to overcome that again.
Right. Well, I didn't see the problem. I didn't see that was an issue,
right.
you know, because I was underage, but that's what my peers were doing, you
right.
know, and that's just how I knew how to relax and unwind. So, what I thought, you know. Yeah, no, I've been aware of my addiction since probably 2003, 2004. I had gone to rehab for the first time, and I didn't think that I was, you know, as sick as those people, you know, so I actually left before I was discharged. I actually walked off property and I called and I said, look, I'm leaving. I don't care where I'm going. I don't know where I'm going or what I'm doing. Or so I got a ride, you know, just ignorant, you know. But I didn't know. I was a kid.
You're dealing with a problem.
I was dealing with, yeah.
There had to be a moment when you said, I have a problem, and you can identify it. And then what was the thing, or what were the combination of things that made you say, you know, similar to when you were in those stairs, I'm going to get myself out of this situation. I'm going to do the work. What were those things? I want you to talk about those.
My wife, you know, I didn't want to lose her.
Yeah.
And I had put her through the ringer more than a couple of times, you know, and, you know, I just really couldn't do that to her one more time. We also had a daughter, a newborn daughter, that was in the mix. And that's when I realized I was powerless, fully powerless over my addiction, you know, and my alcoholism. So that's when, you know, I was faced with an ultimatum. Either I get help or, you know, I lose everything that I had. So I took the lesser of two evils and got help.
So you got alcohol help. Was this the same, about the similar time when you found the support groups for TBI and stroke?
Yes. I never thought that, you know, I was an alcoholic. You know, I thought, well, alcohol is legal. Alcohol is legal. I can drink that when I'm 21. I'll be drinking that, you know, forever. Yeah, because that was my coping mechanism. But I'm blessed to find out that I don't have to hide from my feelings and emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that is not a proactive way of dealing with things for me.
So you found the support groups. You made sure of it. You kept the things that you wanted around, namely your wife, your daughter, and now another baby on the way in a couple of months.
Yes.
And you went even further than that. And now you're starting to work for people who are in a similar condition. And you're starting to do work with advocacy and spreading the word and making sure that people are taken care of. I want you to talk about what you're doing now.
Correct. Well, for this alcoholic, I can't have secrets. Right. You know, and I was keeping a secret from myself by not acknowledging my traumatic brain injury and not talking about it. I was.
So did you find that out in alcohol rehab? One of the steps is to not have any secrets.
Yeah, that was definitely setting me up for a relapse.
Okay.
You know, and that had happened time and time again. So I decided to take a look at it, and I've been, you know, blessed one day at a time ever since. But the advocacy, I've been working with advocating with the National Council on Behavioral Health. We had a event, Hill Day, that was this past October. I was down in Washington, D.C. For the Unite Against Addiction rally, and that was just a wonderful presence of a lot of other people that suffer from the same thing that I suffer with. Everyone was sober. I mean, having 25,000 people there and no alcohol, no drugs, and just being happy in the presence of each other, it was an amazing thing.
And you're advocating for change, and you're advocating for things like CARA, like you were talking about, the ACT.
Correct. Comprehensive Addiction Recovery Act, or Comprehensive Addiction Reform Act.
Okay.
Those are my final answers.
That's part of your work. That's part of your advocacy, is going to and attending events.
Correct.
What's on the horizon? Because again, I want to point out that website's well done, and I like how part of it on brainnewday.com, it says, you know, more to come. I see a blog, a chance for a blog, a chance for your own podcast.
Correct.
I'd love to be able to help you with that.
Yeah, that'd be
awesome. Once you get rolling, I think that you telling your story and you being able to talk to other people in similar situations But what's on the horizon for you besides more diapers?
More diapers and more wipers.
Yeah,
that's great. No, the I'm just fortunate enough to be here, you know, and that's why I enjoy the moments today. You know, I try not to. I mean, if people want to book me as a speaker for an event, that's what I'm going for, becoming a nationally recognized speaker.
On brain injury?
On
alcoholism?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Addiction.
Okay.
You know, that's sharing my story, and, you know, in hopes that it can prevent somebody else from the loss or making the wrong decisions. But today, you know, a lot of kids, I would never drink and drive, blah, blah, blah. All right, well, how many people own cell phones? How many people actually text and drive? Or text message and drive? Read emails, read the newspaper. We're all guilty of it.
Yeah.
That's why cell phone related car deaths, car accidents, car crashes in New York State has surpassed alcohol related accidents.
Wow. I did not know that.
Deaths.
Did not know that.
Yes.
But you see it at every light, and you see it when you're driving on the highway.
Of course.
That kind of peek down. Their head's still facing forward, but they're peeking down.
Mm-hmm. All too often.
Wow.
I speak with the Orange County Jail. They have a Stop DWI program that I speak there. I speak also up in Columbia County, which is just south of Albany.
Mm-hmm.
These are two people that are mandated to see this program. People that have gotten picked up for drinking and driving. With the junior program, a lot of them are using marijuana,
mm-hmm.
so using it like it's a substance. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like, they get UPMs and unlawful possession of marijuana. They don't make that relation that it's
right.
just as dangerous as drinking and driving, right. you know, or texting.
What would you want PT students and PTs, because that's what I'm going into, is the world of PTs. So to hear you say those PTs helped, you know, help put you back together.
Mm-hmm.
What's something that we should focus on if we come across a patient who has had a TBI, who's in a similar situation that you were in? What's something we need to focus on and pay attention to make sure we can provide the best care for the patient? I think just hearing your story puts us in a better position because we hear your mindset. But if you had a chance to talk to people who are going to be PTs or who are going to go treat somebody with a TBI tomorrow, what are some things that you want them to know?
To have care and compassion, but on that, still being able to get the individual motivated. And it's based on the individual. Everybody has their own motivations.
Yeah.
I guess just finding another story. When I was in Helen Hayes, this gentleman that was a physical therapist knew that I wanted to play golf again,
mm-hmm.
or knew that I had played golf.
Mm-hmm.
That's not something you want to do with somebody that's just had a brain injury. No, it was great, but I would get out there and just standing over the golf ball.
So where were you? You were still in the hospital?
I was in Helen Hayes Hospital.
So he brought
me outside with a golf club and a golf ball.
And this is a PT, you said?
Yes. Yep. And he's like, all right, now just swing away.
Swing away.
And I was taking the world's biggest divots out of the ground. It was. I'm glad we weren't on a golf course.
Yeah, you know.
I was tearing up the lawn. I wouldn't hit the ball. That wasn't the object. Just to get into the motion, you know, getting the, and that's what I've realized has been most beneficial. Even if I'm not able to do something how I want to do it or how I used to be able to do it, if I don't push myself and retrain my brain to do it just how I did it, or trying it with another hand, seeing mm-hmm. if it works easier, you know, I wouldn't have made it this far.
You're saying have compassion, and then you kind of smirked. Obviously, this is a podcast, they couldn't see it.
Yeah.
So you're saying have compassion for the patient, and then you smirked and you said, but make sure they get done what they need to get done.
Correct.
So we kind of have to have that balance, that individual balance of what this patient actually needs. Do they need to be told what to do because they're being mean back, or do they need to bring in the aunt that you can't be mean to?
There you go.
And everyone, your family saw that.
Yeah. Everyone has an aunt like that. And no, she, I mean, God bless her. It was, I don't know. I could say that I'm getting brain fried.
But she was there when she, people read what you needed.
Correct.
At that moment.
Right.
And that's a good message to have is, like you said, all brain injuries are different. So of course the treatments and the recoveries are going to vary.
Right.
And we need to vary our approach to the person that we're seeing in front of you. That example of your PT who said, oh, you used to play golf in high school? Well, let's go outside and swing the club. Mm-hmm. Like you said, not a normal thing to do with a TBI patient.
Right.
But if he knew that he wasn't going to get anything out of you that day in your session, he throws a golf club in front of you, and next thing you know, you're out there taking some hacks. He's right. done his job for that day because
right.
he got you motivated.
Right.
So that's exactly. great. Want to hit that website again, brainnewday.com. Just a well-done website and tells your story in a really, really great way. People can follow it, and hopefully your goal is to make sure somebody else reads that who's in your similar situation.
Right. I also go around to schools, colleges, other areas as well, speaking.
So there's any PT school or inpatient or outpatient facility who'd like to talk to Ed, brainnewday.com is how you can get in touch with them. I'm not going to be surprised when you're speaking all over, because I think your story is really well done. And I think you are living what you're talking about, not just getting out of the hospital, not just getting to go home, and not just getting to do the things that you wanted to do. You went past that and you said, how can I do for people who are in a similar situation what I'd like to get done? So you're advocating and you're working for this. Mm-hmm. So that's above and beyond. And I think that it's great that it gives you motivation. It gives you drive to do those good things. And that says a lot about who you are.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank
Do you want to talk about anything else? Anything we missed?
No, yeah, okay. I love my wife, my family. They're all beautiful, you know, and they're what inspire me. You know, they're what keep me going when I can get into ruts. You know, that's another thing with brain injury. You know, I'll get into funks where I'm like lacking motivation. I don't really want to do anything. But I want to do something. I know I have to do something, but it's just this kind of lull in my life.
And
they're there to push me and tell me, you know, what's going on? Let's do something. Let's move a muscle. Let's get outside and go for a walk, mm-hmm. you know, do anything.
And since they know you so well, they know which things to push or how to push or how to get the best out of you when they can recognize. And I think that's another important lesson right there. I'm glad you brought it up, is how to recognize when the person who's dealing with an injury like this is in one of those, I mean, you called it a funk or a, mm-hmm. you know, a cloud, and how to get them out of that, because you're in it and you don't want to be in it.
Right.
I mean, I can see that on your face. You don't want to be in that funk.
Mm-hmm.
How do I get them out of that without reacting in a way that might cause a negative reaction?
Right.
That's a good point to recognize.
Right. The other thing, you know, understanding, having compassion that the survivor, you know, they're still the same person, but they might not be exactly how they were prior to the injury, you know, but because a lot of friends don't understand that, and they can kind of slip away, but family, you know, it's important for them to surround the individual and, you know, understand and know that their support and their love and their being there is going to ultimately be the best for the survivor.
Make a big difference.
Definitely.
Yeah. That's a good note to go out on. I like it. So check out more information about Ed and his story. And I'm going to say keep going back to it, because I expect big things when you start getting some other projects lined up with that, with a blog or a podcast or however you want to get your story and just spread some good information at brainnewday.com. And it was a pleasure listening to you. Good to see you again. I hadn't seen you in a while. And well, good luck when the second baby comes, because I hear it's all out the window then. You got two.
Likewise.
It's two handfuls.
No, that's good. That's why God gave me two hands. But
perfect.
Thank you. It is a pleasure. And I thank you for the work that you're doing.
Well, tremendous. Thanks for being on my show, man. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Like what you hear? Leave us a review on iTunes. It's not like our moms can keep giving us 5 stars every day. Or can they? The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.